Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Thursday, absolutely loaded live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, Fox Sports Radio, iHeartRadio, right here, FS1. It is great to have you here today. 1 hour from now, Greg Cosell, NFL Meat Sandwich, stops by. If you like to bet football, fantasy football, or just love the sport, Urban Meyer next hour, too. Joy Taylor has done, you do things to your hair. I don't even know how you do it. Seriously, I don't even know. I don't understand how you do it.
I always spring these on you too. I don't give you any warning. None. I just start giving you a text. Like, hey,
I like
Colin,
this one.
It's going to be new today.
So what is this style?
This is just, you know, we just wanted a little change up.
My
hair, as you guys all know, you're going on my natural journey with me.
Yeah.
And it's kind of in that mid stage.
I think it's very glamorous looking.
Thank you.
I think it's very glamorous.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right, let's start.
Let's do the show.
My wife always says, stay current. You ever gone to a resort and it had a legendary name and you book it and you get there and you're like, a hotel or a resort, and you're like, ugh, they didn't stay current. You ever go to a restaurant? You go to a town you haven't been in for a long time. Could be San Antonio, could be New Orleans, could be Minneapolis. Oh, that's a great steakhouse. You go there and you're like, ugh, they didn't stay current. Especially now, everything's changing. Everything these days, everybody is much more mobile, and there's so many smart people out there. So we had this story yesterday. The Cowboys got flexed off of Sunday Night Football. First time since 2006. First of all, for Dak, because Jerry's really at his heart a businessman. Through all of his turmoil, still America's team. This ticks off Jerry Jones more than losing. This is great for Dak. Dak makes you relevant. Dak's a topic on Monday. Always. Even when you lose with Dak, they score a bunch of points. They don't flex you out with Dak. So this just guarantees Dak's the future, right? So I just want you to think about it. I'm going to ask you a question because I do believe, and it's one of the things my wife's really good at, stay current. Don't cling to things. Don't have a legacy based on yesteryear, okay? So Dallas hasn't been to an NFC championship game in 25 years. That was Troy Aikman, right? So 25 years. That's the longest drought in the NFC, except Detroit and Washington. So let me just ask you a question. And I want you to think about this. So the Cowboys they've won since 1995. 4 total playoff games. Like wild card games. That's it. Carolina, in 25 years, has won 9. The Jags have won more. The Jets have won more. The Jets have been to 2 AFC championships. Crazy hot mess. Atlanta's won more. Okay. So let's do a process of elimination. Let me ask you this. So let's put together the franchises. We'll call it kind of the gold standard of the NFL, where we consider the elite franchises. They not only win, they win big games. They're mostly consistent. You just say them and you respect their front office. There's a consistency and excellence and intelligence. They don't overpay for players that often. I think you'd go Packers, Steelers, Ravens, Patriots, Seahawks, Saints. Denver's down now, but the Bolin family was remarkable. I always called Denver the Steelers with a mountain range for a long time. They're just having a down stretch. The Eagles, the Giants, the Chiefs, and the Colts. These are really the elite franchises. Excellence, intelligence. They usually don't overpay. They've had downturns, but they bounce back. Then the second level would be respected. They don't have as many big wins. They've had longer droughts, but I'd say Niners, Vikings, Titans, Atlanta, Rams, and Carolina. Now, I know what you're saying. I mean, the Titans really... All right, let's think about it. I want you to think about the Titans for a second. Let's just think about the Titans, because I know you're rolling your eyes at the Titans. The Titans have a Super Bowl appearance. Dallas doesn't. Beyond that, 2 other conference championships within 25 years. Dallas doesn't. And they have double the playoff wins. Okay, what about hot, crazy Atlanta? 25 years. 2 Super Bowls. 8 playoff wins. Hell, they've won four playoff games since 2012. This morning, the Cowboys are in last place. Since 2015, they were also in last place. So in the last 5 years, they have one playoff win and two last place finishes. You are, my friends, who you hang out with. The third category of NFL teams is what I would call the eye roll teams. Overpay, even like some of them playing well now. It's Dallas, it's Arizona, Jets, Cleveland, Chicago, Buffalo, Jacksonville, Tampa, Chargers, Houston, Cincinnati, Raiders, Dolphins. They turn wins into losses. Last 25 years, you know, longer droughts, a lot of embarrassment, too much drama, and just not winning big games. It's not winning big games. Kind of if they make the playoffs, it's one and done. Always have a new coach on the way. You never really think they get the coach right in most instances. It's kind of the eye roll. Dallas is there now. Last 25 years. Dallas has not stayed current. They overpay for running backs. They sign these long contracts to offensive linemen they now can't get out of, and they're old and injured. They spend way too much money on perimeter players sometimes and not enough on, like, their defensive front. They take gambles in the draft that other really well-run teams don't. Sometimes they develop players. A lot of times, though, the Steelers, Packers do. The Cowboys don't develop their players. The Cowboys, on their Instagram, put a picture of themselves at 25. They were hunks. They're now like 50. They're overweight. They're trying to fool everybody. This isn't a shot at Dallas. 25 years. You're the Lions. You're Washington with a bigger brand. You're the resort that people still think about, but you book a weekend there, you go with your wife, and you're like, man, the paint's peeling. The food's not very good. And you look out your window in Miami and you're like, we should have stayed at that place. It's way more current. They got a better pool. It's where all the cool people are. It's not a shot at Dallas, but they're kind of in the eye roll. They're kind of in the eye roll club now. You kind of look at them and go, it's Cincinnati. It's Buffalo. It's Miami. And by the way, I think Buffalo and Miami over the next 10 years are going to move into the next level. I'm not going to give it to them now, but I think they're really close. But, I mean, last 25 years, Miami, you roll your eyes. You roll your eyes at the Jets. They got more playoff wins. All right. So the Big Ten, I like this. The Big Ten Football Conference, right smack dab in the middle of America. They have changed their rules. Good for them. And they're now allowing Ohio State to play in the Big Ten championship game. And the reason they did is they said, well, regardless of whether they played or not in the championship game, because of their head-to-head victory over Indiana, win or lose against Michigan, they would have been in it, right? So they just said, let's just change the rules. So tip of the cap to the Big Ten. But I said this yesterday. This idea of fairness in college sports just cracks me up. There are teams that simply matter more. So Fox and ESPN spend about a month before the season. You don't see this. It's one of the coolest things that happens in sports that nobody sees or talks about. They have a draft, and they draft games and dates. And number one on the draft board every year for Fox and ESPN is the Ohio State-Michigan game. The second game is usually Ohio State-Penn State. The third game is usually Ohio State versus a big out-of-conference team, Texas, Oklahoma, whoever they play. The fourth game is Ohio State and Michigan State. The fifth game is Ohio State and Wisconsin. Then you get into Michigan-Penn State. In most years, the first four or five or five of the first six games are Buckeye games. That's what the networks want. The networks are telling you they're just more important. Listen, I've lived out West forever. USC is the rival, the number one rival for about 7 to 8 of the Pac-12 teams. When they're down, the conference is down. Actually, right now, the Pac-12's got a lot of schools. Arizona State's got the right coach. So does Stanford. So does Utah. So does Oregon. They're all doing well. But USC is down, so everybody thinks the Pac-10 is down. When Pete Carroll was at the Pac-12 and dominating it, it's the worst the conference has ever been. Stanford was awful. Oregon was awful. Washington was awful. UCLA had the wrong coach. You need USC for the Pac-12 to be relevant. If USC now was in the Ohio State, Oklahoma, Clemson class, you'd all be going, well, those West Coast football teams. Actually, the conference has some decent teams. USC, though, is not a national player anymore as of today. It's the same thing with Ohio State. This idea of purity and fairness in college football is absolute nonsense. Networks, remember, college football is all about recruiting. Networks, the big ones like this one, put the big dogs like Ohio State and Bama and Oklahoma and Clemson and Notre Dame. They put them on TV every week. They fight for their games. Humongous recruiting and marketing advantage. Schools don't all have the same money. Ohio State's loaded. Alabama's loaded. Clemson, Notre Dame, Oklahoma, Texas, they're loaded. They have juice bars and smoothie bars and facilities and slides and pools and trainers and other schools can't have. You got to get over fairness in college sports and specifically college football. Also, let's be honest. Wouldn't you want Ohio State representing the conference if they have to play a Clemson or a Bama? The last time non-Ohio State from the Big Ten got to the playoff, I think it was like Michigan State, and they got beat 38-0. They humiliated the conference against Alabama. You don't want that. So this is the right move by the Big Ten. Certain people, certain businesses, certain franchises mean more, matter more, and it's not fair anyway. Get over the fairness thing. Just get over that. It's not fair. Some schools have bigger budgets. They're surrounded by better high school programs. They've got better topography, better geography. They're prettier. They're less rural. They have more heritage. They have more history. Ohio State's one of them. Get them in. This is who you want representing your conference. Nothing against the Hoosiers. Nothing against Northwestern. Nothing against Sparty. It's nothing against the Badgers. But if you're going to play in a championship game and you have to bend the rules, bend it for the Buckeyes. That's my new motto for the Big Ten. Bend it for the Buckeyes. Just bend the rules. Bend them for the Buckeyes. They're starting to, I'll be honest with you, really people are starting to really love me in Ohio. I will accept Grand Marshal invitations for random summer parades.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
ESPN ranks top 10 players in the NBA. So do we have a list of top 10? So they have LeBron 1 for our radio audience, Anthony Davis 2, Giannis 3, Luka Doncic, terrific young player, 4. Kawhi Leonard, 5. That feels a little low to me. Kevin Durant, 6. Off an injury. Damian Lillard, 7. 8 for Steph Curry. 9 is James Harden. And 10, Jokic for Denver. So I just want you to think about this. We know LeBron's the best player. The gap is now widening. LeBron is in his 18th year. Michael Jordan played 15 years, then quit. LeBron's in his 18th year and is still the best, and I think the gap is widening. So let's look at this list now. So the number two guy, put it up again, the number two guy, Anthony Davis, could not win a playoff series of note without LeBron. The number three guy has struggled in the playoffs. The number four guy is a defensive liability, made his first playoffs, Luka, and one and done, and then you've got bad chemistry guy, Kawhi, always hurt Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, 6-8 or always hurt. Damian Lillard, who I love, had a losing record. James Harden's a weirdo, and Jokic is not close to LeBron. This list is a list of can't win in the playoffs, bad for team chemistry, odd for personality, can't stay healthy, and LeBron. That's the list. That is the I would make an argument. Luka, with about a year, could be two. But folks, that list is a health list, a chemistry problem list, kind of an odd personality list, a bad playoff history list, and LeBron. And I know, Michael Jordan played college basketball. You can't say he was done at 15 years and LeBron 18. Yeah, those daunting college basketball years where Michael played against college stiffs 35 games a year. Like, Michael at the end was not as vertical a player. LeBron, in going into year 18, the second best player on this league now is Anthony Davis. And I think most of you would argue that point. You're arguing too. He was invisible in New Orleans. But with LeBron, I just wrote it down. Health, A. Leadership, A. Maturity, A. Clutch, A. Experience, A. Works well with others, A. I mean, the gap is just gigantic. And I like the other players. I think Kawhi's a little low. I'd have Kawhi in my top three. You know, get a basket, get a stop. You know, he's got a quirky personality. That part I'm not going to deny. But get a basket, get a stop. I think Kawhi's in my top three. I'd take Kawhi over Luka today just because I think he's a significantly better defender. And I think he's been in big spots and won championships in games 5, 6, and 7 in the finals. And I think there's incredible value to that. But wow. You can start looking at that list. It is a lot of wow and a lot of holes and a lot of issues. Except LeBron.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
You know, I am so into, and not just because it's at Fox, I am so into tonight's game. Belichick humiliated Sean McVay.
Yep.
The Patriots are bizarrely successful this year. The Rams should win this game. In fact, this morning, I thought about this. If you put the top 10 players in this game, and this is not just Pro Football Focus, but it's Pro Football Focus grading and who I believe are the 10 best players in this game at their position. Aaron Donald's number one, Jalen Ramsey number two. So those are the top two players. Best defensive lineman in the league, first or second best corner. Stephon Gilmore not having a great year, but I'd still respectfully put him three. It's hard for me to separate Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp. They're both excellent. I think Kupp's got more catches. Michael Nwenu, the rookie offensive lineman, has been a huge, shocking surprise for New England. Then I put the John Johnson, the third, the safety for the Rams. Darius Williams, the corner. Right tackle, Rob Havenstein. He and Shaq Mason are a coin flip. Most of their best players in New England are offensive line. But if you went to, like, wide receiver and the tight end groups, New England doesn't have a single wide receiver who could get on the field on the Rams wide receiver group. They don't have a single tight end. So in terms of running backs, Damian Harris is the only one I'd give any carries to. So in terms of wide receiver, running back, tight end, and the skill positions mean more than ever in the NFL, I would absolutely say slam Damian Harris, running back for New England's the only player that could get into the rotation for the Rams, and Goff right now is a better quarterback than Cam, I believe. So if New England wins tonight, it's frightening. It is. New England doesn't throw the ball. Doesn't have an elite pass rusher. Chase Winovich has 3.5 sacks. Does not have a single go-to dependable wide receiver.
And the Rams' defense is incredible.
Incredible. The secondaries, it's incredible. If they win tonight, it's the league should just say, okay, we're going to disband, start over without Belichick because we can't compete. Greg Cosell joining me now live. He does every Thursday. If you bet football, it's fantasy football. You just love football. Greg Cosell joining me live. 41 years NFL films. So when I watch the Rams, and I've seen every snap because I live in Los Angeles, I've seen every snap. They're talked about a lot here in town. They always look kind of the same. It feels like a lot of motion, a lot of sets. They move Goff all over the pocket. I feel like I see the same 12 plays over and over. But when you look at film, are they the same team we saw a couple years ago in the Super Bowl?
In terms of what you said, in terms of sets and those kinds of things, yes, to a large degree. But I think the difference is this. When they played the Patriots in the Super Bowl, Colin, the foundation of what they did was the run game and Todd Gurley. Todd Gurley was still great at that point. And Belichick structured his game plan, particularly his defensive front, to stop the outside zone run game and stop Gurley. The Rams are a little different offensively now. They throw the ball far more by choice. The foundation of their offense is not the run game. Do they want to run it? Of course they do. But it's not the foundation. And what they do a lot more of, which they did not do 2 years ago, is empty sets. They put Goff in empty sets. They spread the formation. The only other quarterback who's been in empty more than Jared Goff this year is Ben Roethlisberger. So they're a different offense than what they were when Belichick pretty much shut them down without an offensive touchdown in that Super Bowl. So we'll see. My guess is Belichick's approach will not be the same as it was in that Super Bowl.
Speaking of the Rams, the Giants were, I think, like 1-7, and the Giants lost to the Rams. And yeah. I watched that game at SoFi, and I sat there, and I remember I came in the following Monday on the air, and I said, when one of the shows that week, and I'm like, boy, Giants, for a team with a bad record, they gave the Rams real physical issues. And I had somebody on, Mark Schlereth, recently said, you know, a couple of these Belichick guys, Joe Judge and Brian Flores, they're confusing quarterbacks. They are confused. They're just like Belichick does. What do you see with the Giants that you yeah. like? Because they lead their division and they have played for 6 weeks. They're a real football team.
Well, and you failed to mention Patrick Graham, who's the DC for the Giants, and he also has a Belichick pedigree. And what they do is they're so multiple with their fronts, and that's a Belichick thing, being very multiple with your fronts, not as multiple with your coverages, a little more coverage consistency, but they're very, very aggressive up front. A lot of pre-snap movement, a lot of what we call amoeba fronts, where there's no defender with his hand in the ground, or maybe one defender with his hand in the ground. That makes it very difficult for the offensive line to identify five players that the offensive linemen are going to block. They don't really blitz a ton, and they don't play a lot of man coverage, but they're really difficult up front, and they're physical. They're really physical and competitive. And on defense, obviously, that matters. So they do a lot of good things tactically, and they really caused problems for Seattle last week.
A team that we said this when they were 2-7 and 3-7, the Giants or Miami, is that they're better than their record. They were bad for September and most of October, but this is a real football team with a bad record. And we said that when the Giants were bad. Miami last year started out like 0-8,
right?
But every week they got better. So Miami's going to play Kansas City and Mahomes. They've given every quarterback issues. What can they do against Mahomes?
And that is going to be fascinating to see what they do against the Chiefs, because Miami has played a lot of man coverage. They like to blitz. But keep in mind, Brian Flores was also on the staff in New England when they beat the Chiefs. And I remember a game in which they literally doubled Tyreek Hill on every single play. My guess is they might feel very comfortable with Eric Rowe, who's a big physical kind of hybrid corner safety. He's their tight end matchup. They could feel comfortable with him matched man to man on Kelce, and then take their chances with Hardman, Robinson. But we've seen what Bill Belichick has done. Flores was on that staff. So we'll see. This to me is one of the most fascinating unit matchups of the weekend, because the Chiefs bring so much firepower on the outside, and Kelce is having an unbelievable year. I mean, Patrick Mahomes is the best third down quarterback in the league. The Dolphins have far and away the best third down defense in the league. So there are so many dimensions and elements to this game on that side of the ball.
Taysom Hill. People compared him to Tebow, and my takeaway, he's a better athlete and a better thrower, but I never really viewed him as a franchise quarterback long term. He throws it a lot better than I thought.
Yeah.
How do you view him today opposed to a month ago?
Well, let's keep one thing in mind, Colin. Only one team this year gets a bye, correct? That's the way the playoffs are.
Yeah.
So he's not playing. This is not an audition. He's playing because Sean Payton believes he's the best quarterback on that team after Drew Brees. That's why he's playing. And last week against Atlanta, the second time they played them in 3 weeks, Sean Payton gave Taysom Hill more in terms of the route concepts, in terms of what they asked him to do in the passing game, and he threw the ball well. Now, it's three starts, so no one should make a judgment about his whole career, Colin, but certainly they're expanding him a little bit. And we'll see what happens this week against the Eagles. But I thought Taysom Hill threw the ball well last week. And in fact, one of the touchdowns he threw, the one to Jared Cook, was the exact same play formation, play design, play concept as Drew Brees hitting Jared Cook for a touchdown week 8 against the Bears.
Wow. So I never want to overreact to Monday Night Football. It's the standalone game usually. Wasn't this week, but we have a there's a history where right. people just overreact to Monday. It was hard to watch Josh Allen and not go, oh, wow.
Yeah.
It was as good a performance by any quarterback in any game I'd seen this year. That's what my eyes told me. What did the film say?
And I would agree with that. And there's a you know what the reason is? We know he's got a big arm. We know he can move around. So what's the reason, Colin? Ball placement. Always the thing that people spoke about with Josh that concerned people ever since he came out of Wyoming. You and I believe, talked about it when he was coming out of Wyoming. And that was the issue.
Yep.
And his ball placement now, this year in particular, has been pretty much every week. I think one exception, but pretty much every week, his ball placement has been very precise. You know, I learned one thing in a conversation with Troy Aikman, who we both know, years ago. And Troy told me, you can do everything right as a quarterback, but if you can't put the ball where you want to put it, you've got nothing. And Allen is big. He's everything you want. And now his ball placement has caught up to all those other things. And when he places the ball the way he did the other night, he is, you think, God, this guy could be really special.
Yeah. You know, I have defended Lamar Jackson. He's 26-7 as a starter, and he's still only 23. And I said this the other day. I put up with Shaq's lousy free throw shooting because he was so powerful. Amazon Prime's content is average and expensive, but they can get anything to my house in 3 hours. So I put up with everything. And I look at Lamar, and in a freeway traffic jam, he's the motorcycle that can scoot through it. He is so unique athletically, and he's mostly okay throwing. And I think, you know, we all harangue this constantly, but I'm like, folks, he's 26-7 as a starter. He does have, though his accuracy is hit and miss, he does at times have a really nice touch. Are we spending too much time, you know, going over and over this, he can't throw the ball stuff?
I don't think we're spending too much time on it. He is a quarterback. I mean, in an ideal world, you'd like your quarterback to be a pretty good thrower. Now, does he have to be the best thrower in the league? He does not. And obviously, there will be games like the other night. They played a bad Cowboys defense in which the run game can be absolutely dominant, and you don't need him to make great throws. Now, obviously, the touchdown to Brown was a great throw, and he's capable of those kinds of throws, clearly. But he's not really a great thrower at this point, and he's got some mechanical issues that need to be worked out. We'll give him – I think he can give a lot of people mulligans this year because of the nature of the season and the fact that practice is not the same, and the offseason certainly wasn't the same. So I don't want to judge his whole career based on this season, but there's no question that he needs improvement as a passer. And that's – I don't think – put aside the one lost record. That's one of those, you know, it's a phenomenal one lost record, Alex Smith. We never talk about Alex Smith being right. a great quarterback.
Yeah.
So you got to just be careful about throwing out one lost records.
Yeah.
So the point is, if you evaluate the player and you isolate his traits, he needs to improve as a passer.
By the way, Jalen Hurts considered a very good athlete, but you know, I mean, Nick Saban moved off him for Tua. Will Philadelphia's offense, when you look at film, will it look different? Forget the completions, but will it be a different offense with Hurts than Wentz?
I'm sure they'll incorporate and integrate far more designed run game concepts. You know, when I did Hurts coming out of Oklahoma in my evaluation, and again, I'm not one of those guys that says a guy stinks or he's great. I don't do that. I try to think of all the possible variables. And I thought to myself, okay, what is he going to be in the league? Do you have to sort of structure an offense like a Lamar Jackson offense? Or over time, can you see this guy developing and maybe being like a Dak Prescott because he does have the same kind of body type? So I'm not sure, but I think early on, you're going to see a lot of design run game dimensions. And I also think you'll see him leave the pocket when he doesn't need to and make plays with his legs because that's what he can do best right now.
All right. And finally, boy, coaching matters. Baker Mayfield probably played. It was the most important game of his career. And I thought he, by and large, played very well. He has cut down significantly on the mistakes.
Yes.
And I know it's the play of the week. And your thoughts overall on Baker and what you saw.
Well, I'll tell you, when you started by saying coaching matters, and you're 100% right, because what did everybody think? They thought, okay, it's a Nick Chubb, Derrick Henry game. The Browns come out, they hand the ball to Chubb. But they had studied, obviously, the Titans' defense leading up to the game. And the Titans cannot rush the quarterback, and they're not very good in the secondary. So what did Kevin Stefanski and staff do? They said, you know what? Yeah, we're a running team, but this week we can throw the football. So we're going to come out and throw it because that's the weakness of the defense we're playing. That's smart coaching. And this play, actually, that we're going to show, and we can show it right now, this was the play that really changed the game because the Titans had just made it 17-7. And the very next play, he hits Donovan Peoples-Jones for a 75-yard touchdown. Beautiful design. Again, this is coaching. They had three tight ends on the field, what we call 13 personnel, mm-hmm. one back and three tight ends. The only wide receiver on the field was Peoples-Jones, and he was split to the boundary side of the formation. And there was Breon Borders, who was matched up on him, a corner that struggled at times this year. Now, Amani Hooker's critical here. Look where he's lined up. He's the only safety, the post safety. He's away. He's on the opposite side from Peoples-Jones. So what do the Browns do? They run what we call power run action. Okay, gap scheme, the guard pulling, run action. Look at Hooker. He is at the line of scrimmage. So now what do you have here? What's left? One-on-one on the outside. There's no safety help at all, and it's a stutter go. And this is beautifully executed by Peoples-Jones, runs right by Borders, and this becomes pitch and catch because he's so wide open. But again, coaching, design, scheme, use of personnel, use of formation, really, really well done.
Good stuff, Greg Cosell, NFL Films, 40 years. Good talking to you, Greg.
Thanks, Colin. Appreciate it.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Three-time national champ Urban Meyer, I can remember when he was coaching at Utah, and I used to cover the Oregon Ducks, and I would tell my friends, whoever this Urban Meyer guy is, he is working the Pac-12. I think he beat Cal one year and he beat Oregon, and they were good teams with good coaches like Jeff Tedford and Mike Bellotti. And I remember telling people, I'm like, this guy, you watch these games, he is working these staffs. Urban went on to win a couple of national titles with the Gators in Florida, who are really good this year with Dan Mullen, and he won at Ohio State. And I always love this stat. He's one of three coaches to lead multiple schools to a title. Nick Saban, Urban Meyer, and Pop Warner. If you're ever in a category with Pop Warner, you've had a great career, and Urban's now joining me live, Fox College Football. So let's start with this, Coach. Urban, I said I thought Ohio State deserved to be in. It wasn't their fault for a couple of the cancellations. The Big Ten was willing to evolve and adapt. Were you surprised the conference did adapt because they could have easily not done that?
Well, the Big Ten, they came out very rigid. Remember when the commissioner said that we would not revisit playing? They did revisit, and they're playing. Then all of a sudden you have that 21-day rule for the athletes when the other conferences had 10 days for the COVID, people that got COVID. And then the six-game rule, you know, I think that showed great flexibility and conversation among the Big Ten Conference. You know, if there was not a head-to-head, this would be a problem. But there was a head-to-head, and they beat Indiana. So Indiana played two more games. I'll tell you what, Colin, my heart, all of our hearts go out to Indiana. That team was a special team. They beat Michigan State, the Wolverines, and Penn State in 3 weeks in a row. And now this would be the year they could have a chance to go compete for a championship, and they won't have it.
Yeah. You know, Justin Fields, you know, there's been three quarterbacks since I've been a sportscaster that I've said you have to pick number one. John Elway, Andrew Luck, and Trevor Lawrence just feel different to me. Now, Justin Fields is really good, and in any other year I'd have him number one. He'll probably be the second quarterback taken. My question is this. Beyond me watching games, tell me about Justin Fields that I don't see and don't know.
Well, I think when you start talking about franchise quarterbacks or picks, it's got to be more than just the ability to play. It's got to be, can he be a leader in the locker room? Because that will never change, that position he has to lead. What I noticed about Justin Fields, especially during his difficult season, his leadership skills are, I didn't know that. I'm not sure Ryan Day and Corey Dennis, who recruited him, knew it. But he's taken over the locker room. He's a great leader. He's a great worker. So that's what I think. People see a guy that's Braxton Miller fast, Dwayne Haskins accurate, Yet what they don't see is incredible leadership and character. And that's what's really important, especially if you're going to sink that kind of money and investment in a player.
Yeah. So, you know, we talk about college football, and I've said this before. Brian Kelly has gotten Notre Dame back to a place I never thought they'd get back to. And I didn't. I said they have an academically, I think it's kind of a town. It's small. It's isolated. There's a religious overtone. And I've said this for 15 years. Like, 8 wins, 9 wins, that's great for Notre Dame. And stop ripping the coaches. Brian Kelly has got them now, as you all know, on the recruiting trail. That's a real football program. And I'd put them in the top 5 or 6 in the country. I want you to talk a little bit about Brian Kelly, what you know, and... Because I really think this year, I absolutely believe Ohio State, Notre Dame, Clemson, Bama are the 4 best teams. And I think they could all give each other good games. Are you a little surprised? You know Notre Dame well. You used to be there. That with some of their barriers, they have become a top 4 to 5 program.
I know Brian Kelly very well. And what I've always appreciated the coaches that have won at all levels. And you're talking about Grand Valley State, Central Michigan, and then to Cincinnati, and then to Notre Dame, and he's a winner. You know, this is not shocking that he's doing this at Notre Dame. I think he's one of the most underrated coaches in the country. Is Notre Dame at times a tough sell? It is. At other times, it's an actually easy sell because certain kids have grown up, and they're, you know, the Catholic schools, you got an instant, you know, that's where a lot of great football is played in some Catholic high schools across America. So he's got a built-in advantage, but for the most part, you have to go out work people. He does not have a backyard. You know, these other programs, Ohio has Ohio, Texas has Texas, California has, you know, UCLA and USC have California. Indiana high school football is good, but the quantity is not there. So he's a national recruiter. So I've always been a fan of Brian Kelly. I've coached against him a couple of times, and I just think he's one of the best, you know, one of the top 5 coaches in the country.
You know, it's interesting. Your name comes up all the time, and I have said this, and I'm sure you through the grapevine, you hear this eventually, but I've said this before. If there was an NFL job open, I've said this before. If I was the Jets, I'd go hire you. You'd be who I'd hire with the Jets. I've said this, USC and Texas, if they had openings, I'd be like, that's the guy I'd hire, Urban Meyer. You've had physical things you and I have discussed. Is it Bob Stoops has told me privately and publicly, I'm done coaching. And then he goes back to the XFL because there's an itch. There's nothing like game day. There's just nothing like changing lives of young people. Can you definitively say, I'm done with coaching forever? Or are there mornings you wake up on Saturday, Urban, and you want to be in that stadium?
There's more than mornings, Colin. You can't do something as long as I've done it that you just feel a little bit empty. I have a great spot in Fox, and I love Reggie, Matt, Brady, and Rob Stone. We have a great group. I really have absorbed that and embraced it. But to say I don't think about it, it's every day. But it'd have to be the perfect, perfect situation. It had to be something that I was confident that the health issues I could overcome and at least prevent. So, you know, I don't know. At this point, you know, I think I'm done, but I've learned a long time ago. You know, I left a job once where I thought I really plan on being here. Then you get a phone call from a better opportunity. So, you know, I think I'm done, but I would never say I'm never done.
Yeah. You know, it is interesting. In college, Brian Kelly told me 2 weeks ago on the air, he goes, the one thing I like about it, he goes, unless your name is Belichick or Andy Reid, you can't control your personnel. And in college, you can control your personnel. One of the things that makes you special is you really like changing lives. It's a big deal for you. You take people, you mold them. Professional football is almost a different platform. You know, they've had parenting, they've had coaching. Is the pro football world to you? I always thought you looked at it from afar. But as you're now out of football, how do you view the NFL coaching jobs? How do you view them? Strange, interesting, or a billionaire you wouldn't want to deal with?
You know, I had unique experiences. I've been a part of all the NFL teams' franchises in some way. How? Because they've come through my office and looked at our players, and a lot of them draft our players. So last year was the first time I called a good chunk of our players that are currently playing in the NFL, and I was so intrigued about why is this organization really struggling, and then why is this one, you know, the New Orleans Saints. I think we have 5 players there right now. I was so intrigued because I've known Sean Payton for 20 years. And Mike Vrabel, what makes Mike Vrabel's, you know, such a good coach in the NFL? So I've got a little bit of a grasp on it now. I never really did. I never have time. But it always, you know, I don't want to be so simple. It comes down to culture and leadership. And if you have control of an organization where you can build a culture, the most perfect example is Bill Belichick. He has built a culture there of excellence. Other places have not, because it's been a revolving door, and really they have not put a premium on that, in my opinion. And it's a very strong opinion because I've witnessed it through my former players. So I've studied it, and I think it comes down to, I get a little tired when you say, well, the NFL college, and, you know, I think whether it's a corporate America, whether it's a great professional organization or a great college team, alignment, culture, and leadership are essential.
By the way, that's either your office or Ohio State. Tell the people where you're at.
Yeah, Fox put this studio in, and they kind of put it behind. I noticed I didn't even see what's back there. There's some balls from Utah, and yeah, I'm at my home in Columbus.
Okay, home in Columbus. There you go. Urban Meyer, great talking to you, Coach.
Great seeing you, Colin.